Texas but you.
Hey, welcome to episode 2 of Nobody Knows the Shadow Boxers But You. I just would like to welcome all of the listeners to episode 2 because, you know, if you tune in episode 1, we left you with a huge cliffhanger and we know you had to come back.
Anybody watching anything worth talking about?
That's a great segment.
Adam, you go first.
I don't want to say Ted Lasso because everyone's watching Ted Lasso.
And Who isn't watching?
Me included. You know what I'm doing? I'm getting all caught up on Ozark.
Oh, wow.
You guys watch that?
No, I missed it.
I've actually not seen that show.
It's so good.
And,
it's very good. I had about a 10-year opposition to Jason Bateman.
What?
Wasn't
He's
based
so
on anything.
Your brand.
I know, but he just, I always felt like he was just so Jason Bateman all the time, you know? In any role, he was just the same Bateman.
I know what you mean.
You know? But then I started watching Ozark and he's phenomenal. And he's directing some of it. It's fantastic.
Right.
So good. Yeah. That's me.
Right. He's got a little bit of that David Spade thing where it's like, you're just kind of the straight man all the time. And I know that that requires something, but you're around people who are constantly funnier than you.
Totally. But he does a good job of like lifting up the funny.
Yeah, that's your job. However, you're just constantly not first.
Right. Ozark's great.
I started watching I May Destroy You.
Ooh, yeah.
I really wanted something happy and uplifting. So
I've heard that's fantastic.
It's fantastic. It's really good.
HBO?
HBO.
And she just wins something?
I started,
I think she won.
Sorry.
She won a big Emmy.
Not a small one.
Goal. No, she won a big one.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, speaking of Emmys, I started Hacks. Seen that?
No, I want to.
Yeah.
Gene Smart.
I'm one episode in and it's one of those where you just know it's going to be a good one.
And Hannah Einbinder. Right?
Here's my fact that I threw at Scott today that I was really proud of knowing that it's not cool, but it's written by the same writers as Broad City.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah, exactly. That's the reaction we want. You know which mic stand I'm using, by the way, Adam, because
it's fading slowly. It's
probably I stole it from Smith's old bar in
2012. Your chin is just on the desk by the end of this.
It's the Continental Drift mic stand. It reminds me of when I was in eighth grade math class and every time our teacher, Maggie Chen, turned around to face the board, everybody scooted up a little bit. And she didn't really notice it. And then
that's such a good one.
It's at some point midway through the class, like everybody's just on top of her. She's like, couldn't figure out what was going on.
That's fantastic. Wow, that took a lot of class coordination.
Yeah.
That's a lot of community.
Honestly, it was a couple people. Yeah. But the thing was, it actually probably would have worked if it weren't for like one or two classmates who chickened out when we got like really close and scooted back. And then the differential alerted her to where we started and where we now were. And then everybody else got in trouble.
That's great. That's great.
But that's what your mic stand reminds me of.
Man.
All right, let's jump into this.
You think I'm going to cut 99% of this or just 80% of this?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's up to you.
That's
on me.
However much of this gold you want to cut is up to you.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into it. Episode 2 is about the song that was released. Today is the day we're recording it. I don't know when this podcast is going to come out. So it probably came out last week. The song is called Something to Hold. And in all seriousness, in the interest of keeping this sort of succinct, because I feel like I could talk about this song for 3 to 4 hours, just because it was written and recorded first in 2015. So it's been spinning around our heads for 6 years, which is wild. There's sort of three things I want to talk about with this song. The first is how it was written. If my memory serves me right, I was on like a long solo drive. I have no idea where or why, hence the memory question. But I remember I was in like somewhere like Southern Illinois, just like no offense to all our listeners in Southern Illinois, but that place is tough. And it was like the middle of winter. It was just a desolate situation. So I was listening to J. Dilla, and it was the instrumental album The Shining, which has the instrumental of So Far to Go, and which is just one of the greatest beats of all time. And it was very loud in the car, and I just had that on, and I just started singing the chorus of Something to Hold over the top of it, and I don't know if I was singing the words yet or whatever, but it was like a good hour of me just that song on repeat, just like singing at the top of my lungs, trying to stay sane. And it felt really, really good. And I was driving back to Nashville, and I got home like really late at night, and I didn't have a microphone at the house. And I just like sort of had this basic recording set up, and I knew I wanted to get it down. So I ended up just recording. Well, I picked up like a little guitar riff, which luckily didn't sound like So Far to Go. So I wasn't just recording, you know, vocals on top of that beat. But I ended up, you know, figuring out this guitar riff and the sort of vocal melody at the beginning, the like, and I just recorded it with the Mac microphone. And over, you know, the next morning I like, you know, ran to the studio and got a mic and spent like 2 or 3 days sort of just in a trance recording that from top to bottom. But the guitar and the vocals through the, you know, shitty Apple microphone are what ended up like staying in the song. It had this like really cool lo-fi thing. And the writing of that was the first time I had ever written something that wasn't at the same time I was playing. And I guess what I mean is like up until that point, the only things I was writing were what I could play and sing on the guitar at the same time. Even to this day, I'm not even sure I can play and sing Something to Hold at the same time. You know, I essentially just recorded a beat as if it was the J. Dilla instrumental, and wrote the song, you know, to that as I was listening back to it. And I don't think I've ever played the two at the same time successfully. Because the guitar has this sort of like syncopated thing with the vocal, and I'm not Sting, so I can't do it.
The non-guitar playing band member, when we've played this live, which we have many times.
Scott plays it.
I play it.
God. So what have you been playing live?
I just stand there like a noob.
You just don't play anything?
No, you play a lot of the
supplemental.
I do the like little riffs in between, but stuff. I can't play the main riff and sing it for some reason. But the point is, it was just sort of like this totally new area of writing that I had never even considered up until that point, because I didn't know how to record myself. So that's the first point. And the second thing was, after those 3 days when I finally like built this thing, was going over to your guys' house in Nashville where we had our studio and playing it for you. And I remember being I was scared shitless, because if you knew me or knew the Shadowboxers at all, and the songs I had contributed up to this point, they were like, you know, like singer-songwriter, like folk type of things, like, you know, Love on This Side from Red Room or something. And this was certainly not that. And I was not at all confident about what I had recorded. So I remember bringing it over to the house, and I was like, I think I got something. Like, I think you guys should hear this. And I was so nervous that I remember playing it and then just going and hiding in the bathroom the entire time you guys were listening to it. But, and I remember like being in the bathroom and hearing like, what the fuck is this?
I mean, we were in shock. I remember being absolutely floored by this, because the context is, we had moved from Atlanta to Nashville at this point, and Cole, Carlos, Matt, and I were living together in the band house where we also rehearsed and where we also set up and started recording demos all the time. This is in the beginning of when Justin had started to mentor us and we started writing and sending him songs. So we were just in a frenzy to try and write and produce songs ourselves, which started out as demos and then kind of got more and more elaborate. We had usually worked together up until this point, and we still did a ton and still do a ton, but this was the first time that one of us had gone into their little hole and taken a song nearly to 100% completion and then showed it to the band.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Because usually
which made me extra nervous.
Exactly,
on top of it being so different.
You had set the bar pretty low when you introduced the song to us. You said, hey, I just recorded this thing at my house. We were like, okay, you want to just get your guitar out and play us the idea? And he's, you're like, no, nah, you know, it was like this very casually introduced song. And then, you know, the groove immediately falls in and your vocal, there's two things I want to talk about with this. One I'm talking about now, which is the way that you set it up and the way that this song fell in the context of our creativity, blossoming production skills and creativity at the time. And how this was the first time that you had taken a song or any one of us had taken a song and really produced it out ourselves and then showed it to the group.
Yeah.
And then the second thing was this is like the first time that I ever heard your falsetto.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I was going
to
say that too.
Maybe you were going to get to that.
Well, no, I mean, it was the first time I had heard my falsetto, really. You know,
I mean, you sing falsetto in harmony, in stacks, like we do. As if you've heard us, you know that we like to use falsetto harmony. And you've always...
A lot
always,
less, though, back then, you know.
Yeah, a lot less, though. Yeah, because we actually... We're still wrangling in our three very different tones and trying to find the right blend.
Still just throwing our backs out, singing in chest all the time, like Mumford and Sons.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%.
And when you're singing with guys for a long time, people for a long time, you think you've heard their voices and you know what everyone's going to be relatively bringing to the table. And then somebody just creates an entirely new sound. That's a marvel. That's like the only thing I can equate it to is like when we were watching the Bee Gees documentary and Barry discovered his falsetto, like
on Nights on Broadway.
On Nights on Broadway, just like as a joke almost, you know. Like I've always thought, like how are you in your 30s or however old he was, and you've been singing your whole life?
Yeah.
And you didn't know you had that?
Yeah.
And that, by the way, is his defining thing.
Right.
I'm not equating you to Barry Gibb, but I'm just saying that.
No, yes, you
even
are.
Though
and
maybe,
it's accurate.
Yeah.
No, but
it's just so crazy that not only had you not known this quality of your voice, but that we didn't either.
Well, I think it was also in part because of the setup of our band. Like, there, you can't really sing a quiet falsetto if the only time you're writing or rehearsing is in like a loud rock band. You know, it's like that doesn't translate. So, you know,
that's
this was
point.
The first time I had sat down like and, you know, smoked a bunch of weed and like had headphones on and like recorded on my own. And like, you know, that's the only way you can get that kind of falsetto, you know?
Yeah. Something else that I'm thinking about too is, A, yes, it's a really soft approach. And when you're in a rehearsal studio with a band over here and a band over here playing loudly and you have to compete, then you can't do those more tender things. But then also, and maybe I didn't appreciate this at the time or even until just now, like you're in a band with guys who usually cover that range pretty well.
For sure. Yeah.
So if there's a part to be sung in that register more quietly, usually it would be me or Matt.
100%. Yeah.
And so like, even if you were to have written this song with us in the room, I don't even know that it would have even been a question. We would have just said, all right, well, this probably is going to be something we'll take a shot at.
Yeah.
But the fact that you had that freedom to do it without us knowing kind of set a new standard for the way that we create in this band.
Yeah, for sure.
I think my memory of my first reaction to this song was Adam and Scott and I met in college, and Adam and I lived together sophomore year, and I have many fond memories of us like finishing studying at the end of the night, going into one of our cars, probably smoking out one of our cars.
Yep.
and listening to like the Raphael Sadiq album.
Yeah. Voodoo, of course.
Or Voodoo.
Yeah.
Which has been a through line through all of our musical tastes and influences. And one of the records, one of the great records that like all three of us, is just a bullseye for all of us. Yeah. And so 2011 and 2014, we didn't really get to flex those types of muscles in our music and in our writing. And so when you came in with that song and those influences were right there, I just remember being so excited, like, oh, we can make music like this too. Like we're gonna put out R&B music.
Yeah.
And I was just so excited that you had done it.
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, and like my journey as a songwriter, everything was influenced by that from that point forward for me, whether directly or indirectly. It just opened up this whole other door of like things that I did not feel confident enough or wasn't even aware that I could do. You know what I mean? Fast forward a few more years, we're in the studio, and this is the third thing I want to say. We're in the studio in LA with Justin at East West. It's this great studio, like right on, it's on Hollywood?
Sunset.
There it is. Yeah. And we decided to actually go in and sort of recut the song, you know, from the top down or bottom up. Neither really makes sense. but we decided to start over with it and not use the demo in any way. And we made a really interesting version, but a few months after that, we all sort of looked back and realized like it just had sort of lost something from the original demo. So we sat on it again for another couple of years. And then when we had the studio out in LA, we were recording Slow March Time Flies By. We decided to just sort of bring the demo out of the Dropbox and bring the version from East West out of the Dropbox and see if there was some, you know, weird chimeric hybrid that we could make.
Frankenstein.
Yeah. And we ended up pretty much using the original demo and building and sort of rebuilding off of that. Like, you know, we replaced the drums and I replayed the bass and we got Nick Rosen to come play keys and Alec Lehrman to come play guitar. But we ended up using the background vocals that Xenia Bashford recorded. She's an incredible singer, sings backgrounds on tour with JT and became a good friend of ours. And she had recorded these like luscious, you know, three-part stack of that vocal melody. And we ended up just blending it with the original thing I had recorded with the shitty Apple microphone. And that's what you end up hearing on the track that was released.
She also didn't just record them. She didn't just record them. I remember she just absolutely banged them out like it was nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
One take, everything.
Yeah, of each. It was astounding. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's just so gratifying for me that this song is out because it had sort of been floated to be released on every project since 2015. And always was just like, oh, there's nothing else. It's not, this doesn't fit anywhere. Everyone always liked it, but it just was like, you know, we certainly didn't have an album that sounded or thematically the fit or whatever it was. So it's just really gratifying that it's out.
And it was something that we were playing live consistently.
Yeah.
and was hitting hard at live shows.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it was so easy to jam out and just build.
Yep.
So how does a slam dunk like that in 2015 that is a derivative of, in all the best ways, the through line influence that we all have go 6 years before being released, you know?
I don't know, maybe
I think you already answered it, but it is really interesting to think about, you know? And I think it's a really good like microcosm of what it is to be in a band with exterior influences, and I'm not going to say like label, that sounds cliche, but just in some cases labels, but just exterior money and influences and gatekeepers of your decisions.
Yeah.
That a unanimous, you know, gem can just be on the shelf like that.
Yep.
Something undeniable.
To be fair, it also falls on us. Like, you know, even when it was just us, it was like, well, this doesn't really fit or, you know, whatever it was. So,
well, I think another point too is we have always been criticized for not having a singular identity as a band.
Yeah.
If I could give consistent feedback that we've gotten for our entire career is that you guys are all over the place. You are blessed with the ability to do a lot of things, and that's your vice as well.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that attracted us in the process of making Apollo, which we made after you had written this song and presented it to us, was that we finally have cohesion. We have somebody at the helm in the form of Justin and Nitsan, who was the co-producer on the project. That's Nitsan Kekov. We had two people at the helm that were leading us and pushing us and pulling us and taking us out of our comfort zones and getting something new. And at that point, something new that other people were reacting to is like the ultimate high. And that's what we were going for. And so in that sense, I think this song fell outside of the Apollo project. Although I do want to point out that I have distinct memories of playing this song in the studio with Justin and his team and everyone freaking out to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just,
especially Dre.
Especially Dre.
You know?
That's Dr. Dre for anyone listening. I think that's the It's not.
No.
I think that's the bigger question that this podcast is trying to answer. And I don't know if there's an answer. I think it's like, you know, is there a God? It's one of those questions. You just try to probe it for as long as you can.
Well, I'm down to keep probing it because it's so fascinating to me.
I got to find a different word. We can't keep saying probe. Scott, you love probing. Poking's not any better.
You've also managed to say the word completion in both podcasts, and I'm down.
All right. Well, I wish you didn't tell me and see if I did it a third time.
Yeah. I want you to fit that into every podcast. I just want to say, I think the message, the point that I'm gathering from this that we learned was a song like Something to Hold allowed us to accomplish the goal of coming up with something cohesive that felt really like us, which was Slow March of Time. It's so funny that, Adam, that you mentioned that all three of us sort of mentioned how it felt so new when you brought it in, even though it was such a, musically, it was such a like through line for all of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
As well. I think the lesson we all learned from this was like when it feels really good.
Right. Sort of the only thing that matters.
Just put it out.
Yeah.
And think about how that principle applies to the way that you recorded it. You recorded it on your MacBook speakers.
Yeah.
And we have since used expensive microphones.
Yeah.
And we took it into an elite studio.
We purchased $6,000 worth of synthesizers from Guitar Center and then returned all of them.
Yeah. And even still didn't quite hit.
And what lasted?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that's the theme of this podcast. This song encapsulates that fully. There's this perception that a lot of people have of bands that, well, if it didn't come out, then that means you didn't think it was good enough. And this is like one of our favorite Shadowboxer creations ever. Just because you're in a band with other people and you have to compromise and you have to try and go with the flow of the direction of things, some things just don't make the cut. And I don't know what that is.
It's like
and
politics.
Yeah. You just have to feel the searchlight going away from you, and you just have to try and stay in the light and follow it wherever it leads.
Yeah.
And then at some point you look back and you say, well, we're on to the next thing, but man, did we, what's up with that one? You know?
I love it.
Scott kind of just dropped the mic.
So yeah, I mean, I hope you're all enjoying Something to Hold. It's a real gem for us. It was a real sort of benchmark for me as a singer and a songwriter. And maybe we get a little preview of next month's episode. It's Scott, your pick, right?
Yeah, I would be the third.
Yep.
What's the vibe? Yeah, no, it's locked and loaded. What's the vibe? I'll give you the vibe. It is a pop ballad.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to go on record and say that this is one of my favorite songs Scott's ever written.
Oh, yeah. This is a Heat Village.
Oh, it's Heat Village.
This is a good one.
It's Heat
but
Village.
But enough about that. There's going to be a whole pod directed to that one.
Guys, I want to just say that I feel like we screwed up. We still haven't come out with a closing.
Yeah. Anyone think of one?
Closer?
Did you think of just something like a sign off?
Maybe it's something that's just like...
maybe we need to write something. Like a dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, smoosh. Something like that.
Right.
You know?
That could be it.
Like, I think
we could just close with the title, you know?
I think we need to record something. It's a closer. It could be dramatic. It could be long.
Okay.
It could be tight. It could be short. You don't got any...
Like a thanks for listening.
Maybe the closing line is like, nobody knows the shadow boxers but you. And nobody knows you but the shadow boxers.
Love that.
It's so creepy.
Oh my God, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah. I think you know how the intro song is just the first. I think you need to add the second line
to the intro song.
Yeah, but we played it. We played it.
Or this is just becomes the outro.
Yeah. Okay.
Same thing. Just flip the lyric.
So do we? Okay. For now, do all three of us say this in sync?
No. Actually, let's each say it, and then just see who's really going to carry the line forward. You know,
who does the best job?
Maybe somebody's going to take the bulk of the closers. You know, we can kind of audition it right now.
Okay, I like it. Okay, let's do that.
No.
I was going to say we could
There's
also
no bad
just
ideas here.
The honor of getting to close it out goes to the songwriter.
Oh, what a great idea!
Nice. That's nice. Okay, you ready? Nobody knows the shadow boxers but you. And nobody knows you but the shadow boxers. Amen. You may be seated.
Amen.
Please be seated.
Ending recording. Thanks so much, y'all. We'll see you next time.
Bye.